Julie Alexander joins us just about every Friday.
Good morning. Thank you
for driving out.
Of course. Good morning, Greg.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
You have the Soper family up in Lansing, so that was exciting.
Absolutely. Anytime we can recognize a fallen hero in our own Jackson community by creating legislation that renames a road, that's an exciting thing to be able to do, not only for the family, but for all of the military that serve, and put that honorary piece in place for them.
So what road, where, how, why?
So I sat and spoke with the Soper family first, just got to know them a little better and a better understanding, you know, where they're from, the dynamics of their family, and how impressive. And Greg, you and I have had this conversation before also. Just a truly a loved and respected family in our community too. So got to know them. We traveled down M60 looking for the perfect place to put the actual signs up. Mm-hmm. So the portion of M60 goes from north of Spring Arbor on M60 where the water tower is. That would be one ending point, and then the other is down closer to Jackson by the golf course. So that's where the signs will be once the legislation is passed. And we had family members come up to Lansing and tell Matthew's story.
So that's just a mere formality to get
it. It is. We very seldom went, especially when they are military. Now, if someone tries to put a road naming bill in place and they are not military or not law enforcement, there have been some issues in the past. But
a little trickier.
Yeah, it is. And but in this case, I feel, you know, very comfortable and confident that we will be able to pull this off and give our fallen hero, Sergeant Matthew Soper, who served in the Army National Guard, the due diligence and the respect that he has deserved and earned.
Now, somebody stepped up and paid for the sign, right?
Yeah. So there is a cost. Anytime we do a road naming, there is no cost to the state. The entity, the family, the community has to step up and pay that cost of the signs.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I believe we've got some very generous people in our community that are willing to do that for the Soper family.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Amy, Matthew's sister, spoke, and she did a great job of just talking about how Matthew, from a young age on, had that dedication and willingness to serve and how important it was. And, wow, my conversations with Shirley were heart-wrenching because, as you probably recall, Greg, my son Jared served for 5 years
mm-hmm.
in the Marine Corps. And we military moms have a special bond because when you say, I would never say goodbye in the airport. I would just say, see you soon. When they were deploying, those were really tough goodbyes. And for the Soper family to, you know, not have Matthew have returned and so close to the end when his service was going to be done. It's been 12 years now since we lost Matthew.
That's amazing.
12 years.
Wow.
And so now is the right time to put this in place and give him that honor that is due.
Thanks for doing that.
Oh, my honor. It's anytime I can serve my community in that way. Again, it's not costing taxpayers anything. It's just doing the right thing to honor our military and a community hero.
I went to school with his dad.
Oh, okay.
So, known them for quite a while. Your ag tour or ag group got together?
Yeah. So as you recall, I am the chair of the House Agriculture Committee. And as I listened to all of the industry about the challenges COVID-19 presented in simply getting food on the table, food to the restaurants with the restaurants shut down, what was the impact there? I knew that these industry-related groups needed to have their voices heard. I was reflecting on some of the other House committees and had a conversation with the chair of Commerce and Tourism. And Chair Marino, I asked him, would you like to do a joint committee meeting? So again, we can have the conversation and bring to light what those challenges have been for the industry in simply getting food and beverage to our table with COVID-19. There were so many pieces that were moving on so many levels that I thought there would be value in allowing those individuals to have their voices heard and bring to light, have the conversation and discussion. What were those challenges? What might be done differently? What are some of the long-term effects? What could we be doing differently? What do we need to be cognizant of in the future? So we had a joint committee hearing this last week, and it went extremely well. We're going to be putting a video, a presentation together on it as well, because I think we need to capture those voices and those stories.
Certainly everything's a learning experience, so I'm sure you've learned a lot, and there's things you can do different.
Absolutely. I think the biggest concern we heard overall from those in the industry, restaurant owners, retailers, grocery store owners, including Mr. Kennedy, came up to Lansing and testified what it was like as a grocery store owner as the executive orders were changing and they had no way or place to get information. What does making sure people are following all in the same direction, going down the aisles or socially distancing in line, what does that all look like? And where did he get his information from? What were those challenges? What did he do as a restaurant owner or as a grocery owner if people didn't want to wear the masks or weren't wearing the masks? What some of those challenges were. So we spoke with retailers, grocery store owners, restaurant owners, greenhouses. Recall to say that you plant a garden in May is overlooking the bigger issue, the planning of your garden, the planning of what seedlings need to be planted to be sustainable, to produce your own food, to feed yourself. There are many, many families in our state that do that. And especially with COVID-19, I think it elevated the conversation where they wanted to do it more for their own health, safety, well-being. So we heard from the greenhouses as well. We heard from potato growers and some of the challenges that they have, not only with the storage of their potato products, how they were processed. In Michigan, we are a number one producer of the chip potatoes. So making potato chips with the potatoes grown in Michigan, but the potatoes that come into our state from other country or into our state from other states, and how are they stored? What are those challenges? The challenges of the processors. So whether we're talking about fruits or vegetables or meat, what happens when the processing plant is shut down because the employees have COVID or for safety reasons aren't showing up for work? Or another piece we heard repeatedly, when they were making more money by staying home, and then with the federal $600 a week, the number of individuals that chose to take unemployment rather than work and work safely, challenges did that create in the process? So there are a lot of conversations and
all over the map, aren't you?
All over. But food and beverages, the liquor control, what did that mean for that bar that maybe kept their kegs of beer down in the basement? Well, after the kegs of beer were sitting in the basement for a period of time or in a back room, they needed to be picked up because a keg doesn't last longer than, you know, a month or two, and it's not fresh, so they've got to take it back. Another huge challenge we look at in the industry are the return bottles, the bottles and cans that we were not able to return. So what safety concerns do we have there? What about pesticide? So we know that there's a period of time every year where new individuals going in need to be certified to spray for rodents, insecticides. So farmers need to be certified. And when those pieces were shut down, what were the unintended consequences of that? What happens to that restaurant that's sitting vacant for 3 months? Because no one's using that restaurant, I mean, you're going to have the rodents are going to infest it. Mm-hmm. So if those that run those businesses aren't able to have the employee workforce that are certified because they can't go and take the test because the state has shut them down and it's not available, accommodations were very, very slow for those industries. So what could we do a better job at next time?
So it's a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. And it's a conversation we just need to be having. So I think the more we elevate the conversation, the better results will be.
One thing we do know, COVID's not going away.
Correct.
It's here.
It is here. Right. So we need to be addressing it in a proactive way. I mean, we need to, and the public needs to be assured that there is an abundant, a safe, and reasonably priced food, right? We looked at what happened with milk. It happened very minimally in the state of Michigan, very minimally. But in other states, farmers were having to dump their milk because there was no place for it to go. Now, while that we could find a place for a farmer's milk to go in our state, they had to travel and they got a reduced rate. So the farmers took a significant loss on the pay that they got paid on that milk that they were selling from their farm. On the other hand, the quantity of milk is plenty, but you'd go to a store and they would limit you to 2 gallons of milk. Why? Because the processors needed to switch over to the gallon-sized milk, right? So people were buying that gallon jug and taking it home versus the small containers that had been sold in schools and the bulk milk that was sold to restaurants. Cheese. Normally, cheese is packaged in very large packages for restaurants. Cheese sales went down because the restaurants were selling more cheese than a normal family would consume. So the packaging piece was significant as well.
So fight for the budget up there right now. Right.
We continue to have the conversations. We have made a little bit of progress on the supplemental. Those are dollars, for the most part, that have come in from the CARES Act, federal dollars that are here for us to spend. We need to make sure we're spending them wisely.
Are we?
I believe so. I believe every piece thus in place. We are going to allocate another $800 per student. A school district could use it in this current school year or the next school year. And those dollars can help them with any PPE, any cleaning supplies, any miscellaneous expenses or modification in their school building, classrooms, that will allow those kids to get back to school safely.
Yeah, I know one of the committees earlier this week said it's going to cost $1 billion just for the to fight the COVID. For the supplies for schools.
And I think we also need to look at each district. The return to learn plan that we presented this week simply allows districts to do what's best for the safety, health, well-being, and education of each child in their district. I think we realize kindergartners need a different environment than seniors in high school, right? When we look at distant learning, how successful can a student in high school be versus expecting an elementary age child to sit down and be structured, especially when the parents are out working and may not be there? I think every parent out there that's been doing the homeschooling with their kids the last few months have a new appreciation for teachers and the challenges that we as teachers have in the classroom. So I think the important piece there, Greg, to your point, is that we acknowledge each district in the state, each community in the state is different. We have different needs in regard to what the COVID-19 situation is, what works best for that community.
And each one is going to have a different financial challenge. I've talked to some districts that are in a lot of trouble and some that are maybe okay.
Yeah, some of the additional Title I dollars that have already come into our state, I asked for a breakdown from our Jackson County superintendents. Please give me the dollar amount you are receiving. And because it's based on a Title I population, which has to do with a piece of it has to do with the free and reduced breakfast lunches. So when you look at the dollars each district's going to get it varies significantly. So each district has its own unique set of issues they need to deal with. But again, right now with the situation we have, they each have their own school board. I mean, school board members are so powerful. Those are your elected voices. And those are the individuals that superintendent reports to. A superintendent should not be running a district. It's the school board in which the superintendent reports to.
What do you think is going to happen in September?
You know, I hope to see the kids go back. I really do. I understand there will be some parents out there that don't feel comfortable with it. Each family needs to do what works for them. If they have an individual in their family that has some medical issues or a child that has some medical issues, I understand that family might vary it, right? They have every right to be extra cautious in the beginning. But I believe the faster we get back to a routine, the stability, the more successful our children are going to be as well. And we need to look at the numbers and the data of the number of children that are actually been affected with COVID-19. And those numbers are extremely low. But again, we need to make sure we've got good CDC protocol in place. And it's just a reminder to teach everyone good hygiene habits as well.
State Rep Julie Alexander, are you seeing any of your clients?
I'm always seeing my clients. There is a group of individuals that asked to meet with me this morning, so I will go meet with a large group. I am out and about, in and out. I will pop in and out of Lansing for the summer. There are a variety of issues that I've been engaged with, both policy-wise and budget-wise, and some statewide policies that I've kind of been tackling. So that it's easier for me just to drive to Lansing for those meetings, so I will be doing that. What your listeners need to know is I'm here to serve you and whatever you need. If you would like a one-on-one visit, if you have a group that you would like me to come meet, visit with, if you have a Zoom conference call, if you'd like a legislative update, I am more than happy to do that. The best way to reach me is either email or my office line. I have staff that's there and answering those calls. My office number, 517-373-1795, and my email address, julialexander@house.mi.gov. And just a reminder that the new auto insurance rates will be kicking in July. It appears that the guaranteed rate rollbacks that we legislated will be even more significant than we placed in legislation. And so it's important that you reach out to your health insurance agent and your car agent to better understand what coverage you have now. There is also a website, reducemiratesnow.com, and that will help you guide you through the process as well and answer some questions you might have.